If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Reverend Jesse Jackson is in our studio. Well, there's a guy who knows a little bit about running for the presidency. Welcome back to the studio.
Good to see you again today.
Do you miss those days of running for the office like that?
Well, I do in one sense. Another sense, I've not stopped running, working, making the case. And it is our challenge as Americans to make certain that those who are running carry forth an agenda that makes a difference. If you're not careful, the press will have you focused on who raised the most money, who postures the best, and at the end of the day, it'd be like cotton candy. There would be no there.
You know, that is, I so agree with that. It's frustrating for me even to watch the campaign of Senator Obama, who may well be a great candidate and a president someday, but so much is about the fact that he's running and how he's running, and not so much about what he's done or what does he think.
Well, my case is that if you're a horse, you get across the finish line by yourself, then you're a show horse. If you get across the line with a wagon full of issues that matter, then you're a workhorse. We need workhorses in the White House who will have in that wagon real issues. For example, 51 million Americans now have no health insurance. That number is expanding. Today, we're exporting jobs and capital, importing guns and drugs. Taxes are going up, and services are going down. That's real stuff. We need an urban policy to create jobs and to reinvest in America. If we just prioritize rebuilding our crumbling schools, roads, bridges, asbestos, you could put millions of Americans back to work. Jobs do matter. It's the alternative to welfare. It's the key to self-esteem and dignity, the way you generate revenue, where you generate authentic taxes in a very real sense. And so we must only be for ending a war that was ill-advised and that we cannot win. But it's time also to reinvest in America and put America back to work. Many Americans now have, middle-class Americans have seen their jobs simply flee. There was a time we came to Chicago, the West Electric and Sunbeam and the stockyards. We came here to make product, export product, and create jobs. Now we're importing product and exporting jobs, and therefore we have record foreclosures. And that's why I'm convinced that now's the time when you are Appalachian or whether you are Inglewood, the white and black and brown can find common ground on the basic theme of reinvest in America and put America back to work.
The Rainbow Push Coalition annual convention is coming up the first week of June, right? The second?
This coming Saturday, Congressman Charlie Rangel, Chair of House Ways and Means, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, Congressman John Cunyas, Chair of House Judiciary, Congressman Jackson, Mayor Shirley Franklin from Atlanta, former President Bill Clinton, will all come together at Rainbow Push, focus on an urban policy, a plan to green line, red line America, again to reinvest America and to create jobs, and to invest in our infrastructure. We have the idea that jobs don't matter and jobs really do matter, so just let them go. The idea that schools really don't work but jails do, it's not quite the truth. So the focus on Saturday, and it's open to the public, I might add, 5th and Drexel Boulevard. The big focus Sunday will be on Katrina. I mean, it's a shame of America. A quarter of a million people are still in exile. They can't get back home. They can't get the resources. They can't get their vote protected. You can vote from New York or Detroit to Baghdad in the name of democracy, but you can't vote from Atlanta or Houston because the state will not allow satellites outside of the state. That's states' rights, seizing the voting rights protection again. And so that Sunday, the focus will be on Katrina. Monday, the big focus will be the women's lunch will be on women, dignity, and decency, and equality. 35th anniversary of Title IX, but the idea of calling women all these names, degrading names, all this misogyny, it has to stop.
Last time I saw you, I was sitting in the studio. You were standing outside on your way between NBC and possibly the Tribune Tower here. And it was the Monday after Easter Sunday after Don Imus said those things, and you told your parishioners to gather in front of the NBC building and protest the things that Don Imus said. How do you remember that period? How do you reflect on what happened?
You know, there had been this pattern of degradation and name-calling that was pejorative. Gwen Ifill, an outstanding journalist, so does PBS, and he'd referred to her as a washerwoman, a demeaning term in that context. Venus and Serena Williams were on Playboy, and they said in their trilogue that they maybe should have been in National Geographic as if they were animals. Hillary Clinton had been in Selma speaking for voting rights, and they say, bitch. Next.
These are all things that Don Imus has called these various people.
Next should be one, cornrows with gold teeth in the mouth, gang symbols. I mean, just, he should have been fired then. And then, of course, the Rutgers girls, something about those girls, their innocence and their brilliance touched America's heart in a very special way. And at that time, advertisers began to pull out, and he had to go.
But Jesse, Reverend Jackson, where do you draw the line between a harsh comics, free speech, and silencing somebody? I mean, there is a free speech issue.
There's free speech, and there's also something called unprotected speech. There's something called slander, something called degradation, something called...
But degradation is not illegal, and slander is hard to prove.
Well, people have a right to also prove with their feet and with their dollars and how they really feel. And I submit to you that there's something called unprotected speech in the law. You can't scream fire in the theater. You cannot slander by race, by religion. That is illegal. But the quiet one being illegal, it is socially and morally unacceptable.
All right, but then if you say let's then run out of business somebody who says something that degrading, then where was that call prior to Don Imus about all of the artists and comedians, many of them in the African-American community, who are even worse to black women?
Wherever they came, whatever women they were, Hillary first, the white woman, the Rutgers, the black girls, really the ethics of the matter transcend the ethnicity of the matter. It's just not right. Even before there were rappers, when Mick Jagger was doing something called Some Girls, or saying black girls won't be effed all night, or brown sugar. I mean, these were very pejorative. It seemed that America at that time kind of chose free speech over free speech of dignity. And then the rappers came after the kind of era of Mick Jagger, and the standards got lower and lower and lower. At some point, people bounced back and said, no, enough is enough. Stop degrading.
But where was that? Where was that prior to Don Imus? Where were you and Al Sharpton then?
Well, not just Al. There had been many voices speaking out against it, but you couldn't hardly get a toehold because the power of HBO, the power of Time Warner, the power of BET, all the rhythm was against speaking out against or being heard. I suppose what made Imus a bit different, he was not just a comedian. Imus was on NBC 750 hours a year. Imus was on radio 1,040 hours a year. And that's a lot of power. That's not just comedy. And with that power, he could choose to put it. That's why Dodd announced his candidacy on that show, Joe Biden, because it was a political power statement. I might add, contrast that with that kind of hours on TV of the power to determine guests, and they try to appeal to the host. Every day on the, if you look at TV from 3 to 10 every day, where you have Scarborough and you have Wolf Blitzen, there's not a single black, Latino, or Asian American with a host, show that they host. Or 10 to 12 a night where Arsenio was 15 years ago, zero. So in some sense, it was a power vacuum that also was addressed.
Still, but what I'm trying to get you to address is, where was the march against rap music prior to Don Imus?
Well, we did march against it, and we spoke out against it.
But it didn't stick, did it?
No, it's kind of like Russian roulette. You keep firing the pistol, and one day a bullet finally goes
through. And so where is it today? Where is that bullet today?
I think the swing now, for example, a rapper was supposed to be on the cover of an Ebony magazine, who had some of these lewd words, and Linda Johnson Rice pulled that cover. When she pulled that cover for Ebony and Jet, then BET, which has been promulgating a lot of this stuff, Deborah Lee said, we must reassess our standards. Then Sylvia Rohn, who has Motown, said, we must, the ground is shifting.
Well, how quickly is this supposed to happen? Because Don Imus got fired, or got fired within a week. Where is the expediency to literally silence, stop the production of the CDs, which are saying horrible things about people?
Well, tell you what, number one, it's not right. But you know, we had a large group at Time Warner Shelters meeting last week in California. There'll be a large group at the Viacom Shelters meeting this week in New York. Because at the end of the day...
Are you going to be there? Are you going to tell them to stop producing that music?
Of course, we've already done it. And we urge them to stop using the N-word. Stop referring to women with B's and H's. I mean, we can have good fun, clean, exciting fun without degrading anybody by their race, their religion, or their gender. It's harmful. It's unnecessary. And people are using their strength to fight back. You know, going to the back of the bus was the law, but it was bad law. I mean, denying blacks the right to vote was the law, but it was bad law. So people have the right to fight for a good law, for law that's fair, law that's protective.
But do you worry, though, that I want to know who's going to be on the committee to decide what. And by the way, you and I do agree on a lot of things, certainly on this, that music is degrading and that a lot of that language is upsetting to a lot of people. It's hurtful, and it may be unlawful, or maybe it should be. But here's what troubles me about this. Who's going to determine what words and phrases, what laws, what ethnicities?
You know, public consensus is a great voice in the marketplace. And when the pendulum switches, or the pendulum shifts, John, in the marketplace, it helps draw the line. For example, a lot of rappers are now saying, we will not use the N-word no more. I mean, Russell Simmons, who has been a great producer of this, says it's no longer right to use these words. Well, he didn't think that until a month ago, you know, because the marketplace, people took as much of this as they could take. I mean, just the misogyny on women, just degrading women.
Well, what do you say to filmmakers? We were watching Boys in the Hood on TV the other day on a video, and there's terrible language, terrible imagery. It may be accurate, though, which is the defense of rap artistry, that this is a reflection of what it's like in East L.A. or the south side of Los Angeles or the west side of Chicago. And if you don't like it, trust me, we don't either, but it's our reality. It's a reflection. What do you say to that?
That is, if the marketplace takes degradation without resistance, there'll be more of it. If it resists, there'll be less of it. So people have a right to fight for dignity and decency and high standards. When you see children 10 and 12 years old referring to girls in this way,
yeah,
or women in this way,
because
it's been promulgated through mass media. I mean, mass media, quantitatively, our children listen to more radio and watch more video than they do home, church, and school combined. And so those have that kind of power over the public airwaves. Have some public responsibility.
Yeah, but you know, I'll tell you what, though.
I'm not sure I have a right to invade your house.
But that music is not broadcast. That's sold as a private purchase between a CD manufacturer and a purchaser. Those words don't get broadcast on radio.
Much of it was on HBO.
HBO is not broadcast airwaves.
And was on BET and was on radio. We begin to challenge radio. Many, quote-unquote, hip-hop radio stations were carrying the raw, lewd language. But they're changing that because the market is saying enough of this is enough of it. And I tell you what, that shift in the public consensus is what's affecting the whole dialogue.
That's good news. We need to pause. It's 2:22. Reverend Jesse Jackson in our showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. It's the John Williams Show on WGN.
From the time the sun.
Reverend Jackson's in our studio. I don't mean to be flip when I ask you this, Reverend, but I will. The lacrosse championship was determined over the weekend. The Duke men's team got second place. Did you or would you send them a conciliatory, congratulatory message on their accomplishment?
For the athletic feats, they deserve to be congratulated. And it is good news that they were not found guilty of molesting a woman. It's not good news, however, that men would use their resources to pay women to dance naked before them to give them gratification.
I agree.
And so on the one hand, they were protected from the crime of molesting a woman or women physically. And it was unfortunate that woman apparently lied on them, and that was not a good thing. It was not right. It hurt a lot of them. On the other hand, the lesson should be learned from that, however, is that young men should not organize a drinking party and pay women to dance naked before them, because that's a very hazardous party.
But you aren't going to be in the habit of protesting every college frat party that does that. And yet the full might of Reverend Jesse Jackson and your organization was brought into that argument and ruined the career of the coach, ruined at least for a period of time the lives of those young men.
What about the girls? What about their careers? I mean, there are no winners in this, John.
I don't think so.
And, that's the point. There are no winners in this. And so I hope a lesson to be learned is, A, the good. As one young man said, he said, fortunately, my parents had the resources to protect us from going, you know, into jail. a lot of people who are accused don't have resources, and so they do go to jail. That's a lesson in this. The second is that young men should not put themselves at risk in this way, and they did put themselves at risk, and therefore they had to pay a real social price for it.
Those boys were not guilty of the crime they were charged. Some of them weren't even in the room when the dancing took place.
And that means that the prosecutor was playing light with his cards. He was wrong. I mean, he overstepped, it seemed.
Think when you went down there, maybe we're overstepping our own...
Well, I didn't go down there. That's not true.
I
did not go. And we were asked to come, and we talked with a number of people in the area, a number of college students, a number of ministers in the area, and we were vigilant because, after all, John, this is a pattern in the South.
But that's not due process. It's not a pattern with those young men. I mean, you or I didn't know those young men. We knew there was an accusation by a woman of dubious character. We didn't know a lot about her, but we knew that this wasn't the first time
this was not an accusation that took place in Sunday school someplace.
Well,
there are some things that we do know, and we do know that they organized this party. We know they were drinking. We knew that they had these women to dance naked before them. What was not proven was that they touched them physically, which they should not have. But the point is, I hope your son and my son would know that is a high-risk party, and there's no moral value in that party. And the risk was a high risk, and they got burned. I hope it never happens again.
I need to pause for the news, but I think that the point I was just trying to pin you on was, are you going to admit to them that you made a mistake and that your mistake had consequences unintended to them?
I didn't make a mistake. My appeal was for the truth to come out. We did not indict them. We said let the truth, do not spare the investigation. Because this happens much too frequently, John, where the rich prey upon the poor, where men prey upon the women. And it just shouldn't stop. And you should urge your son and mine not to put themselves at that kind of risk.
A few more things to talk about with the Reverend. We've already talked about the Duke lacrosse situation. If you just joined us.
John, I think this is very important. In biblical times, that was a woman being stoned to death because she'd engaged in an act of prostitution. And when Jesus came upon the crowd and heard them cheering and jeering, and they said, in effect, you were not here, you don't know what she did. We caught her having sex. And Jesus said, well, that is what she did was wrong, but she didn't have sex by herself. Where's her partner? So any among you who had sex with her, which you could have a try to, if so, if not, throw the first stone. And no rocks were thrown. He in effect said to the woman, sin no more, don't do that anymore, you go in peace. And the men who were throwing the rocks walked away angry at him. In some sense, when the question came to us about the young woman, and we heard that she was dancing naked she was in college, you know.
You offered her a scholarship.
Yeah. So if what you're doing, you have to raise money to keep your kids, take care of your kids, and go to school. You will enable you to go to school without dancing naked.
Mm-hmm.
It was not in any way sanctioning her dancing naked. It was the way of saying, if you must. And then we found that during that period, you might recall, a lot of college campuses, young women are in college doing these strip dancing for money to stay in school. And we are too great a nation to reduce young women to having to prostitute in order to go to college.
Well, maybe some of the responsibility lies with the women, too. I don't remember when you went down there, you patting the young men on the back and saying, let's try and make you well or whole.
I didn't go down there. That's the get that part.
I won't say that anymore.
I didn't go down there.
You were not physically on the campus.
And after all, the young men had the power. They're the one. It was their party. They put up the money. They bought the drinks. And so to whom much is given, much is required.
But
go ahead, Steve.
Well, I don't know if the Reverend can hear me, but they didn't have the power. I mean, the people with the TV cameras had the power, and the people who were, you know, ridiculing them, and the accuser had the power in that situation, and they were powerless.
Well, they were not. It was their party. And they also, once they were accused unfairly, they also had parents who had the power to get them the best of lawyers, and they won their case.
Shouldn't the punishment match the crime? If what they did was have an ill-advised party that a woman voluntarily agreed to dance at for money. And again, I'm not defending them, but that's what happened. Then should the consequences of that somehow be commensurate with what they did.
But what can you do to her that equates to what has happened to them? What are the consequences of
that? I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about them. I'm saying that what they did, it seems to me, in retrospect.
I think the prosecutor has virtually lost his job. I think he's basically out of it now.
That doesn't help them.
It doesn't help them. But then, do we not face in our democracy those kind of consequences every day? And John, those who don't have resources, who don't have good lawyers, there's some people been in Cook County Jail 5 years because they don't have a lawyer. 5 years waiting for trial. 4, 3, 2 years. Because they're poor, and those boys were spared by having enough money to have a good defense.
But it still seems as though what you're saying is you got treated unfairly, but at least you have enough money to get out of the situation, and lucky for them.
And a lot of people, when you look at the John Birch trial, a lot of folk who are innocent go to death row because they didn't have the money to get DNA.
But won't you allow?
So we're fighting this issue of criminal justice system every day.
Steve.
Won't you allow for the fact that these rich white boys, though, got treated by a racist stereotype, just like a lot of poor black boys have through history?
Well, and they did, and they put themselves in an awkward position, because when these, as you put it, rich young white boys use their power and their money to have this orgasmic party, they were in a very perilous situation. And when this woman, for her own purposes, her own wrong purposes, accused them of, then this whole stereotype began to play out. I tell you, it's I'm glad that they were not found guilty. I'm glad that they will recover and go on with their lives. But it does say that highly risky actions has very damaging consequences. I hope they can learn at least that lesson from that.
If the races were not an issue, would you have played, would you all have offered the scholar, would it have played out the same way if the lacrosse team were predominantly African-American?
When I went 4 times to brought to bring Americans home from jail, Goodman in Syria, I went to get a black and a white soldier. The white soldier died, so I brought Goodman back. I went to bring Americans home from Cuba, none of them were black. I brought the Americans home from Iraq, from Saddam Hussein. None of them were black. I brought the 3 soldiers home from Yugoslavia. None of them were black. And so our sense of reaching out does not limit itself to simply ethnicity or one side of town.
Well, what
I would say that the act of men alluring women with their monies for their private gratification, we must admit that is unethical. But more than that, politically, it is highly risky. And therefore, that very act is ill-advised. And you put yourself in a very perilous predicament. And they did. And I hope that lesson is not lost on anybody.
I want to move on to just a couple of other subjects. I know that at the Rainbow Push Coalition convention, which is coming up June 2nd, Hillary Clinton is going to speak. Barack Obama will speak as well.
Let me say, before we get to that, Ernie Banks, we're going to honor Ernie Banks.
Oh, I know you wanted to talk about that, too.
And Hank Aaron is coming. I think Willie Mays is coming. Ernie Banks is Mr. Cub. He is that living link to the whole Jack Robinson era breaking into Major League Baseball. His record speaks for itself. He's been such a gentleman beyond his playing days, and so it was overdue. And I'm glad that Mr. McDonough saw the wisdom of the appeal. Mike North and I kind of drove this agenda.
Yeah.
And that the Jashella's meeting, I spoke here at the Tribune. And so Ernie is 76. He's as happy as he can be, and we're happy for Ernie. It's a big deal.
Yeah, I saw him in the studio. He was here last week, and he had a hat with a mathematical formula on the front. And I said, Mr. Banks, what is negative B plus or minus the square root? And he said, you know what that is? That is an important formula in mathematics, and it is a solution. And what we need in business and in life are people who have solutions. And then he just took off. He started doing your show. He just got wound up.
That's Randy Banks.
Yeah. He's a great guy. And Hank Aaron, maybe too, and Willie Mays.
Well, Hank is coming. We talked with Willie 2 days ago. Willie's trying to come because all of them are big Randy Banks fans. And Willie's got it. You go to this, the ballpark in San Francisco, there's a big statue of Willie out front. He was the guy for them, and Hank Aaron was that for the Braves, and Ernie Banks, the Hall of Fame, was that for Chicago. And I'm really glad that we honor Harry Carey for his tradition and Jack Brickhouse, because I mean, they're part of Chicago. I mean, they're part of the culture of our rhythm here. Aaron Banks deserves his proper place, and he's going to get it in his lifetime, and that's a cause for celebration.
Yeah, no kidding. Talk to me about the presidential politics for a second here. You going to endorse? Have you endorsed? Did I miss it, either Hillary or Barack?
Oh, yeah. Barack would get my vote in part because he is a favorite son. He's from Illinois, and we're neighbors. I'm trying to raise the bar of the agenda for all of them, however, because when they debated in South Carolina, none of them put forth Katrina as an issue to be addressed. And that is a source of shame upon the American face. When they were in Selma, they talked about the Voting Rights Act back in the day, but none focused on the unfinished issue of voter enforcement now. And so while he will have my vote because I know him, because he's a neighbor, I'm challenging all of them to put forth agenda items that will improve the lives of those who have been locked out of our economy.
You were talking to me off the air a little bit about some of this, that if there were one item that you would ask a presidential candidate or this presidential race to be about, one item, it would be what?
In the war abroad and in poverty at home, to reinvest in America. In Appalachia, John, a coal miner dies every 6 hours from black lung disease today. And most of our city schools are crumbling. The result is higher taxes and lower services, first-class jail, second-class schools. It costs less to educate our children than to incarcerate them. And we now have a jail industrial complex for profit at the expense of the poorest children. I watched on Tim Russert do a show the other night with on the former head of Health and Human Services, Joe Califano. He was describing the level of alcohol use among students in colleges and drug use among them in college. And he was describing how many of them are not weaned off of drugs, you know, once they get out of college into the workplace, but they're not in jail. The biggest market for the drug usage are the kids who are on these campuses, but they're not in jail because they can afford to stay out. So the question of fighting for an even playing field for all Americans remains a great American challenge. An even playing field, we play by one set of rules.
We're out of time. Reverend Jesse Jackson, I knew you were in the building. We asked you to come on down, and it's always a fascinating hour when you do. Thanks for visiting with us.
You're the man.
By the way, that grandson of yours in the Chicago Sun-Times the other day, there's some competition for
you.
Was
that the bomb of what? That was, man, you made my goosebumps jump.
It's nice to see you, sir.